sober. I'm always grateful to be sober. And I've been hanging around Bill Root probably for 9 years. And the main thing that impresses me about him is not that he's so perfect, or not that he's worked a perfect AA program, or not that he was a perfect husband or a perfect dad. And by the way, Bill, John Roop, his oldest son, and little Billy Roop are here today as well. They're probably about 60 years old, so where are they? Let's welcome them here. Okay, they've been to a lot of AA meetings since 1957. Bill Root's been sober since January the 3rd, 1957. My mama was changing my diapers when he had about 10 years of sobriety. But I'm not going to tell a story. The thing is that impresses me about Bill Root is that he's focused on two things. At 86 years old, I agree, and I know in my heart that he sees the world differently than I do. And it's two things, his relationship with the Lord and loving other people. And I read my meditation this morning was the greatest commandment, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And it was the Good Samaritan that's mentioned in the 12 and 12, or it's in the big book. It's in the big book. It's in working with others. And that's the essence of who he is. We go around all over the place. He's always smiling. He takes no medication at 86. He has no physical infirmities. He's happy all the time. It's because he focuses on the two things that are most important, I believe. You know, and people, you figure you get 40 years of sobriety, and that would be it for growth. But I've seen him grow a lot in the last nearly 10 years, a whole lot. He's come a long way since he met me. That's just a joke. But the main thing that really has changed, we used to go out to eat with Janet Roop, his wife. They were married 64 years, and she went to be with the Lord in a year and a half ago exactly. And the main thing, I saw him take care of Janet. She got Alzheimer's. She got sick, and he took care of her. He solely provided for her, changed her diaper. He turned her. He had a bed set up in the den where he just provided for her. And he never, ever, 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 never did he ever complain. Like, this is a burden on me. He would always say, Gary will tell you, Gary Neidhart. He always said, this is an honor. What a gift God's given me to take care of my wife. And it's never, he felt more useful and more loved by just taking care of her. And everybody might say, well, anybody would take care of their mate like that, John. Well, I don't know about all that, but I know he did. And he did it with a powerful sense of love, and it changed him. I'm telling you, I know it changed him into a man that sees the world differently and to love other people differently. I think that's why a lot of people that are here, because they love him and he's touched your heart, you know. And a lot of people for many years, like Dick, people's been knowing him for 30 years, and it's a pleasure. He's changed my life. He's given me the love of God and helped change my life, and it's beautiful. It really is beautiful. And a lot of people come here and they leave before they, you know, they find a good sponsor that loves them. So it's an honor to know him, you know. That's all I got to say. If he'll come up here now, Papa Root. Is that all?
Everything he said was true. You know, it's interesting. Gary, for example, his mother died yesterday, and he stayed over, he and his lovely wife, so they could see me make a fool of myself one more time. I thank you, Gary, for doing that, and your wife. When you're reading the things that happened in 1922, there's one thing you left out. It was very important. I was born on July 17th, 1922. My wife was born on April 27th, 1922. We were born in the same hospital in Chicago. That's a little unusual because you have hospitals in neighborhoods and we weren't from the same neighborhood, and yet we were both born in the same hospital. And she and I got married when we were 22 years of age. And first thing she and I did before we got married, we'd won a basketball tournament in Chicago, and they were having a dance, and they asked me if I had anybody to take to the dance. I said, no, I hadn't, and I was breaking in a new girl at the bank, and I was training a new girl at the bank. I hope she wasn't broken in, you know. Now, so here we are, two kids that are born in the same hospital, and 22 years later we meet each other and we get married. And at that time we weren't alcoholics, and yet we both became alcoholics. She would have had 50 years in sobriety. She came in AA a year after I did. So that's an addition to your notation about 1922. I thought you might be interested, because I've been around since, as some of the others have too, since the beginning of this organization. It says up here, the 33rd Atlanta Roundup. And that's true, it's the 33rd. But it was 34 years ago that the Atlanta Roundup started. Because shortly after, maybe within 2 or 3 years, the Atlanta Roundup time conflicted with the Georgia State Convention time. So that year, the Atlanta Roundup did not exist. So there was 1 year, so actually, although it's 30, what is it, 4 years ago? 30, whatever, what does it say? 33rd, it was actually 34 years ago we started. I'm going to tell you how you can get to the podium. I wasn't on the committee. I wasn't one of the 12 members, whatever it was, on the committee. I was in charge of the parking lot. And if you worked with me in the parking lot, you wore a blue blazer, a tie and a coat, a tie and a white shirt. That's in July. Out there, and boy, we had fun. And it was a big deal then, really, because at that time it was at the Radisson, and people would come in, husbands would be working all week, they'd be flying airplanes, and they would come back and land in Atlanta, and then they'd get on a bus, and the bus would bring them out to the Radisson. So here it is Friday and Saturday night, we got all you people coming parking cars, you get all the buses bringing husbands out to the Radisson, you got wives waiting for their husbands to get, and alcoholics are trying to get through to the meeting. It's a big deal. And I'll tell you how, if you want to get to the podium, the best way to do it is work in the parking lot. You wonder why is that funny? I'll tell you why. Because at the first Atlanta Roundup, there was a girl speaker, and it was a wonderful time. We had a nice group coming. And in the parking lot, a policeman came up to me and he says, the people have been parking in the buses only, and we're going to have to haul them off. And I thought, geez, there's about 15 of them. Here's our first roundup. Everybody's happy. There's going to be 50 unhappy people having to get their car out of hack. So he said he'd give me 20 minutes. So I came in, and girl June Guinan had just got up to talk. Phelan was sitting over there, and I come up to Phelan, and I told him my problem. Phelan says, well, we can't do anything about it now. The meeting has started. And being raised with Irish Catholics, I never paid much attention to him. I told him, the hell, you're not going to do something about it. We're not having 50 unhappy people. He says, then you go tell them. And that's how I got to the podium. I edged June Guiney out of the way, and I made my announcement. Now, 33 years later, here I am back. So I'm 86 now, 33, I'd be 119. You'll see me again, I'm 119. And that's the story. Good night. All right, now, what I'm going to tell you tonight is just the way I perceive AA and the way it's worked for me. If you want to hear really how to do it, get the big book, go to big book meetings, go to step meetings, go to study meetings. You'll learn how to do it. And I'm all for that. But see, I came in before AA was a disease. I don't say it was a moral problem, although it was with some of us. But it wasn't even a disease when I came in. And so when I came in, I'm not going to talk much about my wife and I. We drank. We had children. I will say one thing, daughter. I wouldn't lie from the podium. Where are my sons? These two, stand up. Will you two? Give another hand. They like applause. My wife and I were two practicing alcoholics. That means there's a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of fighting. One of us was Irish, and I was a Baptist. Baptists don't fight. We're nice people, but Irishmen do. So these kids had to grow up with that atmosphere. Now, I had five children. Peggy was their sister, who died right after she became 51. John and Bill are perfect examples of American youth and young men. Very fine people. Then I have a boy, Richard and Glenn. When Jan and I drank, we had Peggy, Johnny, and Billy. And then when Jan and I got in AA, we had Glenn and Richard. We never had any trouble with the kids while we drank. But as soon as we got sober, those last two weren't worth a damn. So my message tonight, if you want your children to turn out well, drink. I was, Jesus Christ came in my life when I was 16 years of age. And it was at Conference Point Camp in Williams Bay, Wisconsin. I really remember that day. I was sitting up to hear the motorboats down in Lake Geneva. It was beautiful. I was spirit-filled. And I would have stayed that way, except you girls develop bumps. If you hadn't developed bumps, I probably would have been perfect. So it really was Eve's fault and your fault. It must have been that the reason, because although I was following it, all of a sudden as I reached interest in other things, God went on the background. And my life became the story of the prodigal son. My wife and I got married. She wasn't much on God at the time. But we did do some things that were spiritual. I used to go to the Normal Park Baptist Church. And I remember one time she went with me, because I'd be at the Baptist Young People's Union, and she would come with me over there. And one thing we did that a lot of people don't know about, she and I made love in the baptismal font. Let's hear it for organized religion. I always get a kick out of people saying, I'll never go to a church, I don't want any part of church. A lot of times they're in an AA meeting sitting in a church, you know. I don't have any part of that church. What are you doing here, you know? Anyway. So I grew up and Jan and I got married. We didn't drink when we got married. I went overseas and came back 3 years later, I guess it was. And when I came back, I think I was an alcoholic. And are there any fellows or girls in the Navy here? If you would just raise your hands. There's one. Anybody else? Number two. Anybody else? Jesus, give me the two guys out of a big group like this that are in the Navy. Didn't they see Anchors Away with Frank Sinatra and that Jesus? They walk out in their blue coats and all the girls go, yeah. You know, you guys really missed it. Of course, I was in the Army. But I didn't get any attention. But anyway, what I want to do is thank the Navy because my wife stayed home. She didn't go overseas. And when I got home, she was an alcoholic too. And in our neighborhood, there was a naval training station. And those guys took their time to help my wife become an alcoholic, for which I'm extremely grateful. It's just about the way it was, too. I came back from overseas. Some guy said to me, why don't you go to college? And I said, I wasn't too good in high school. He said, well, give it a shot. So I gave it a shot, and it turns out I was a good student. I like student. We were living in a one-bedroom, a dining room kitchen, that apartment on the third floor in Chicago. And because when I came home, they wouldn't accept servicemen that had children. A lot of them wouldn't rent apartments to you. So I moved in with my mother-in-law, my wife, my daughter Peggy, and myself. There were four of us in this apartment. Then I went to DePaul University and graduated from there. And if you hang around Catholics, they'll get you by osmosis. So at the end of the first year, there was my mother-in-law, my wife and I, my daughter Peggy, and my son John. There he is. At the end of the second year, my sophomore year, there was my mother-in-law, my wife and I, my daughter Peggy, my son John, and my son Bill. At the end of my fourth year, there was my mother-in-law and my son Richard, you know. There were four of us, plus three adults, in that one bedroom, dinette, kitchenette apartment. I'm down studying in economics or marketing that I've been allocated $3 million to set up a marketing program for the IBM company, and how am I going to diversify the money so that we can get the maximum use of it. And when I go home, I'm eating hot dogs. What a dichotomy between what my life was down at school and what it was at home, because we didn't have much money. We're living on a GI Bill. But we had parties at that house. I was the only one married. We'd have 20 couples in. Still with the wife, kid, mother-in-law. And they came. One guy came from Northwestern on the north side of Chicago. He called me up and he said, Buckles invited me to your party. Is it a one-bottle party? I said, what's a one-bottle party? He says, you know, you drink your bottle and you go home. And I said, if that's your attitude, don't come. So he came and stayed 3 days, you know. Well, finally I graduated from college. We moved out to Park Forest, got a three-bedroom and nice place out there in Park Forest. And everything was going good. My wife were away from the old people until I walked into a bar out there, the Don Club, and went home and told my wife, geez, I met some fine people. And it all continued all over again. Didn't do any good to move to Park Forest or get a big house. The problem was Jan and I. And the kids had to put up with it. And I'm surprised they turned out as well as they did, because the only thing we had love. I love the kids and love Jan, and we might fight, but we love the kids. In fact, sometimes when we're thinking of getting a divorce, Jan would say, well, we're getting a divorce, but I get the kids. And I said, no, you don't get the kids. I get the kids. The kids had probably been happy to have some stranger take them, but, you know, we never would give up the kids. You know, that was it. Well, I won't tell you too much of what happened. We're drinking, you can imagine. But at any rate, on January 3rd, 1957, I was having so much fun, I came in AA. I woke up on the floor of a girl's house that I still know. I don't like her too much, but I know her. And the reason I don't like her is she was there when I came in. See, I can tell you people anything. You don't know if it's true or not. It's only my perception. But that bitch knows. Sooner she kicks the bucket, I can lie with impunity, you know. So we came in AA, and I started, I think I call it my period of sobriety. I went to Homewood 17. I had two sponsors. One sponsor was Art Hodes. I mention people's last name all the time because they're all dead. Even my pigeons are dying ahead of me. You don't look too good to me, Gary. Anyway, Art Hodes said, it's an inside job, Bill. You got to clean up on the inside. Put the cork in a jug and clean up on the inside. I don't want to listen to him. The other guy that was my sponsor was Jack Murray. Jack Murray said, anytime that you go through one day, 24 hours, without taking a drink, you're a winner. Boy, I listened to Murray. I love that. Because see, when I sobered up, it's what my friend down in Florida used to say, when you get a drunken horse thief and you sober him up, you get a sober horse thief. And that's what I was. I put the cork in a jug. I was still living by my wits. I was still kiting checks. I was still running floats. That's all I'd been doing to try to survive with the family. So when I got in AA, it didn't become any better. I just did the same things. But I didn't drink. I got active in AA. I got active in starting meetings. I had a 500-person picnic we used to have. Kids were there. It was great. I was really involved. And after a couple of years, I went up to my sponsor, Murray, and I said, Jack, I'm not going to make it. He said, why? Did you have a drink? I said, no. I haven't had the urge to take a drink since I made the phone call. I used to drink every day and get drunk once or twice a week for the last 3 years of my drinking. But for some reason, which I think is God, he removed the desire when I made the phone call. So I never had the urge. I said, no, I didn't take a drink. But I'm going through this. He's, wait a second. If you're an alcoholic, most alcoholics can't get sober. Now the percentage is what, 1 out of 10? Pick your number. Back then it was a little higher, I guess. But anyway, he says, most people in alcoholics that come in Alcoholics Anonymous can't get sober. He says, if you're an alcoholic and you're not drinking, you're a winner. You're a miracle. And that's why I say this is Miracle Land USA. You miracles are out here. A lot of them will die. Some of you might. In fact, I will eventually. Even if I don't drink, you know. But at any rate, so he was telling me what a good thing it was that I go to bed sober. I'm a winner. And I'm so happy I met Murray, because I was a loser when I came here. Fought in a war. I had a wife and 5 kids. I had, and I kept them fed. I had graduated from fine university. But in my heart, I felt I was a loser. I felt I couldn't do it. Anything I could do was nothing. If I could do it, it couldn't have been nothing. I'm nobody. See, and that was not true. AA finally pointed out to me what a wonderful spiritual giant I am. Now I understand that I'm probably way above all of you people, but that's all right. You know? But anyway, I was a loser. And now Hodes is telling me, it's an inside job. You got to go. I don't want to listen to him. After this time, all of a sudden, Hodes starts looking better. Because, see, when I came in here, it was important that I not drink no matter what. No matter what, I didn't drink. And then after a while, based on my experience, you can't stand yourself that way. And that's why the steps are there. See, the steps aren't in the first chapter of the book. First chapter of the big book says, Bill Wilson's telling this story. And then he said, we're going to talk about alcoholism. And he says, there is a solution. And then the fourth chapter, he says, to the agnostic. It isn't until the fifth chapter he gets into the steps. Now, this is the gospel according to Roop. Not necessarily according to my friend here, you know. But that's the way it was for me. So I had to go through my period of sobriety. I went and I told him I wasn't feeling good. And he said, well, you ought to get in the steps, which I did. But when I got into the steps, like it came to the admitted to God, to himself, another human being, the exact nature of wrongs, and God got involved. And I always, because God was in my life, I had no doubt that God was. I finally got around to the fact that he loved me again in spite of me. But I was always plugged into God. You know, but I was plugged into God like my lamp is plugged in at home. My light, my lamp back home, was always plugged into electricity. A lot of times the bulb ain't turned on. See, and that's about the way it was. I was always plugged into God, but I didn't think God could handle a lot of things. In other words, if I was going to cheat on my wife sober, I didn't really think you could ask God, because he'd probably say, don't do it. Or if you wanted to commingle some funds. You don't want to go and ask God that, you know. You got a pretty good idea. You even know what the answer is going to be, see. So my light was always not always turned on, but I was always plugged in. And then I'll give you an example of what it's like. I was going to a whorehouse, and God... God was... I'd have God in the front seat. I would tell God, you probably won't want to come in here. There may not be your type of people. Who knows? I personally have never been to a whorehouse. Dick Anderson was telling me this story. You know the interesting thing? We all have our whorehouses. It's April 15th. You're doing your income tax. Hey, God, why don't you have a cup of coffee? I'm going to do a little creative figuring. Or maybe you're a sales manager or a salesman and you're going to do something with your expense account. God, go help somebody. I don't need you. See, we all have our whorehouses. Today, my light stays on. Today, I don't use God in that manner. Why? Because I'm so wonderful? No, if you're here long enough, you realize it's stupid doing it the way I was doing it. If a guy says, I want to have a doorknob for my God bless you, get a doorknob. Make sure it's shined. I think there's nothing worse than a dirty God. But what I want is I want a can-do God. I need a God. I need a God that can help me. I'll give you an example of this. Some of you know Laura, Glenn's wife, and Glenn Roop, and the daughter, Rachel and Ramsey. This morning I get a call from Rachel. She's, I think, 18 years of age. She's living up in Virginia. Her mother moved down someplace in Georgia. I can't remember the name. Anyway, she's up there alone. She spent 9 months at a drying out place in Utah. Most of the time people do that, they don't get sober. This kid came home, has been sober, working two jobs, working with kids, teaching kids. She's got her own apartment. She's making her own payment. She's 18. She's an alcoholic. And she tells me, God, she says, Dad, Grandpa, how does anybody get along without God? Wow. I'm not too sure that she's flesh of my flesh. She got it so quick. But I think she got the right answer. The whole big book is telling this is going to be a deal where you get closer to God. See, I think one of the problems we have as alcoholics, or at least I had, because God had come in my life when I was a kid, I knew that I was a child of God. I was a king's kid. I was a king's kid. What does that make me? It makes me a prince. And if I'm a prince, I ought to be able to run my own little fiefdom, don't you think? Do you think I have to have some father telling me what to do? And I think that's what happens. We are king's kids, and we decide we're going to run our own show. And boy, I tried it. And the reason I'm big in God today, because it didn't work for me. If it's working for you, God bless you. I love what Sandy Beach says. She'll say to a pigeon, have you done anything on this God bit? And the pigeon will say, no, I don't care much for that. And he said, well, have you gone to church or anything? No, I don't do that. Have you read any spiritual books? No, I don't. Have you ever gone to prayer? No, I don't do that. And then Sandy will say, how's it working? See, and that's the answer. If it's working, keep doing what you're doing. It wasn't working for me. And that's what the big book says. The answer to alcoholism is getting a... What does it say? Anybody got a big book? The answer to alcoholism is you got to get a power greater than yourself in your life. You got a void. You're trying to run things yourself. You can't do it. So what does Alcoholics Anonymous do? It's a training ground. When you get to the steps, and the steps are something you learn, you read, you have discussions, you go to step meetings. Eventually, there's something you have to live. Alcoholics Anonymous is a great training ground on how to live inside your own skin. And the only way I can live inside my own skin is if God's first in my life. And God was first in my wife's life, too. After she died, I started reading in her Bible. Man, what she had underlined, what she had written. One thing I really hate myself, not hate, but I'm sorry about, that I didn't listen to my wife more. I never got to know my wife. I was so busy running my mouth. I never listened to her. She was a very spiritual girl. She gave me three little cards for me to say. I've been saying them for 20 years. She wrote that down. I got it there. Bill, say this, and I do that. So what do? I wake up in the morning, and the first thing I do when I get out of bed, I'm still in bed, I say, thank you, God, for my life and my wife. She used to love to hear that. I think she still does. I really do. And then I say, I thank you, God, for my life and my wife, and I thank you for Johnny, or Peggy, Johnny, Billy, Richard, Glenn, and I'm laying on my back with my legs going on a bicycle, doing my exercises. Then I put on the armor guard, gird my loins with truth, go through all that. By the time I get out of bed, I'm not upset. My 1,440 minutes that God has given me looks pretty good to me, because I'm plugged into God, not into me. Before I got out of bed, I figured, geez, I'm a commissioner man. I got to take this money back to this guy. I had a cancellation. I was supposed to go out and make some money. Before I got out of bed, life sucked. So now before I get out of bed, I do these things. You don't hear people say they get up and pray? I pray in bed before I get up. Well, I do my exercise, of course. And it works. Why do I tell you this? Because I don't think you need some guy that's been around 51 years to tell you to do the steps, to go to step meetings, get a sponsor. You know all this. After you've learned all this, the trick is doing it. I'll give you an example. I believe, as John mentioned, I'm into what Jesus said. He says, love your God with all your heart and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. I'm into that. I believe that. John and I went down to Central Florida, Central Georgia a while back. We went down to hear Jimmy Carter's Sunday school class. And the Saturday night before that, we went over to a AA meeting. And as I walked in, it was a little, the fellow had already started reading How It Works. And he was a guy that had a patch over his eye. He was heavy set, and he could hardly talk. And I'm figuring, who's this asshole? That's the guy that's into love. That's the guy that's into non-judgment. See, once you learn this stuff, it's darn near impossible not to go back into the old person. The trick is, don't stay there. Some of you may have had the same gift. I got a spiritual gift when I was very young. I can spot assholes in any crowd. A couple over there. And the trick is not to use it. See, I can tell if I'm plugged into God. I walk into a room with strangers. I don't know. And if I look around the room and I see King's kids, I'm plugged into God. But if I'm plugged into some, what's he doing here, you know? Why is he fondling that woman that ain't his wife? Get your hands off her, Andy. I know I'm plugged into me. The whole idea, I think, is to get God-centered. Now, none of this is worth a damn if you drink. Everything I've said is based on not drinking. I don't know about drinking. I never drank since I came in. I'm one of these guys. I never got a white chip. They didn't give chips when I came in. Never got a white chip. You don't have to take. I mean, some people think that when you come in AA, you hear so much about slips, you figure, when am I going to have mine? You don't have to. Based on my experience, you don't. I don't get that much applause for the head joke. Well, we're here at this roundup. This is the icing on the AA cake. You've gone through the trenches. You've worked with others. You've got to continue to do that based on my experience. You got to go to meetings because Jesus told me and told it to Peter. He said that... Do you love me? And Peter says, you know I love you. And he says, and feed my sheep. Then he said again, Peter, do you love me? You know I love you, Lord. Tend my sheep. And he said it the third time, Lord, do you love me? Jesus, or Peter, do you love me? He says, you know I do. He says, then feed my lambs. And that's what we're doing in AA. We're trying to take care of the sheep. feeding the lambs, trying to help the ones that want to be helped, and trying to stay in love and out of judgment. If you do that, based on my experience, you're going to smile a lot. I smile a lot. I don't walk around with a long face. You know, the only people that really smile a lot are nuts. I'll let you draw your own conclusions, you know. I think it's spiritual. No. But the point is, I didn't smile a lot before I plugged in. And I didn't smile a lot when I would take it back and run it. Now, do I now take it back? The other day, a guy called me and had a problem. Right away, I thought, I can get a lawyer. We can get this solved. Right away, it was me, right back going to run the ship. Then all of a sudden, I thought, what are you doing? Why don't we pray? So we prayed, and in 2 days, the thing disappeared. I don't know how it happened. So what I'm telling you, that the stuff you talk on the spiritual here, if you want to use it, I think you probably end up a pretty happy individual. And what that means is you're out of judgment. You love everybody. What? I say I love everybody. How can you love everybody? Barbara, you're here. Some of you people don't know that, but that girl's a great girl, Barbara. I was at a meeting just about a week ago, and she said some things I'll never forget. She said to Al-Anons, pray with your family, pray with your spouse, pray with your... My God, Barbara, how'd you know that? I hadn't told you yet. Isn't that wonderful? All over this place, people are going into prayer with family. How did I get into prayer? Well, I walked up at home in 17 to a meeting, and the fellow was sitting up there making a coffee. He said to me, Bill, what's the matter? You don't look right. And I said, I told him what it was. And he said, what are you going to do about it? I said, I'm going to hit him with a tire iron. He said, don't drink while they take you to jail. Now, this guy was a hoodlum. I mean, he was a tough guy. Not just hoodlum. He was tough. He'd kill people. He was tough. Marine Corps, 3 or 4 invaded. Tough guy. One of my heroes before I got sober. So when he told me that, I said, how would you handle it? He said, I'd pray for him. See, the reason I think AA works is because I go by the people that are working it, not the book. Once you learn the book, that's fine. Who's using it? Who's living it? Who's walking the walk? Go with them. It ain't the book. It's God through you people. You know why God's here tonight? Because you brought him. It ain't me bringing God. Or you brought God. Now, you folks have been so attentive. And you're going to have a great weekend that I think you're worthy to hear the head joke. In Chicago, in my old neighborhood, there was a young couple got married. And when they had their first child, when the child came out, it was nothing but a head. Didn't have any arms, didn't have any legs, didn't. But everybody liked the head. Gee, in grammar school, they used to take the head to grammar school. He was valedictorian to the grammar school, went to high school, head of the class, cheerleader. Everybody liked the head. The head got to be 18, and in Chicago you could drink beer. So they took it down to a neighborhood bar. All the neighbors were there, and the head sitting up on the bar, and the mother says, give the head a beer. Bartender does, and the head, miracle, little legs come out, little arms come out, little boy, neck comes out, he runs up and down the bar. Everybody, yay, head, yay, head. And the father said, give him another beer, and he did. And the head fell over dead. Bartender said, he should have quit when he was ahead. Yay, head! Every one of you gets 1,440 minutes each day. Rich man, poor man, beggar and thief. Everybody gets the same. What you do with it, it's going to dictate what kind of a day you're going to have. If you say life sucks, it's a sucky day. You called it, baby, you know. So it's up to you to choose. It's what you want to do with the 1,440 minutes. The morning when I wake up, a little devil on the side shoulder tries to tell me it's going to be a bad day. Little angel on this side, it's going to be a heavenly day. I get to choose. I cast a deciding vote. And so do you. But let me tell you this. If you go to bed tonight and you haven't had a drink, you're a winner. And your life will get better. And if you work the steps, with all the connotations it means, with your sponsor, meetings, and so forth, you'll get better. I love you all.